you know, I came in and did a little search for an open window and said, oh, the window's been smashed.
Vandals target the Democratic Party in Anchorage from the Alaska Public Radio Network. This is Alaska News Nightly for Monday, the 29th of March. Good evening, I'm Ellen Lockyer. Also tonight, extreme drumming at Chimay in Bethel.
You know, occasionally you get hurt. There's been blood on bocce and blood on the drums more than once. There was some bleeding going on Friday, as a matter of fact.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Today's broadcast of Alaska News Nightly is presented by the Association of Alaska School Boards. Their mission is to advocate for children and youth by assisting school boards to provide quality public education, supporting student achievement and local governance. Information at aasb.org. And by BP, unlocking Alaska's resource potential.
Debate opened this morning on a bill reasserting the state's role in guarding against illegal immigrants by taking away their driver's licenses and state ID cards. The only thing that supporters and opponents agree on is that the vote will be close, with very few people from either side expecting victory on what has become a divisive measure. In presenting the bill to the full House, Anchorage Republican Bob Lynn told members that legal privileges are given only to those who qualify for them.
The biggest thing this bill does, is it makes the expiration date flexible. It requires that your driver's license expire when your visa or your green card or some other legal presence document expires. In other words, the license expires when your legal presence expires. If someone doesn't have a legal right to walk down the street, why in the world anybody have a legal right to drive down that street? That's just common sense.
Opposition to the measure is coming from two sides. One fears that Lynn's new requirements would take a step toward the federal Real ID national identity card the state has avoided for several years. But Lynn points to the last section of the bill that reads, quote, "This act may not be construed as support for or cooperation with the federal Real ID Act." The other side sees it as causing undue requirements on immigrants who are legally in the state. Anchorage Democrat Lindsay Holmes sees the bill as a step toward tightening control over domestic violence or human trafficking victims. She says those people would be unable to function in society without paperwork or identity.
We're talking about people who are here legally. People who are here legally, they may have been married to somebody, they might have come in as part of an arranged marriage, or they might be, hopefully not, but maybe married to a military member or married to, or they might have been imported somehow. They might be in refugee status or asylum status, and it's very easy for somebody to simply take your paperwork away from you, and that's one more way to control you.
Holmes says the bill gives too much responsibility to employees at the Division of Motor Vehicles who are not trained in immigration law and do not have access to federal immigration databases. She says the documents themselves can be very confusing to those who are not trained in dealing with them.
I think that what we're going to have here is a lot of people who have jumped through all the right hoops. They have dotted their I's, they have crossed their T's, they are in this country legally, and they're going to be unable to get any form of driver's license or ID.
Lynn's bill is scheduled for more debate and a vote this evening. Vandals broke a window at the Democratic Party headquarters office in Anchorage over the weekend. Party officials say they don't know what the motive was, but suspect the incident was tied to the passage of national health care legislation last week. APRN's Annie Feit reports.
Democratic Party staffer Dave Matheny arrived at work a little before noon on Sunday. He felt chilly and quickly discovered the problem, a broken window.
It was funny because I drove right up and parked right in front of it and didn't even notice it. And then, you know, I came in and did a little search for an open window and said, oh, the window's been smashed.
Matheny immediately called the Anchorage Police Department. Two officers came to inspect the scene and write a report.
He thought it was probably a crowbar that had done the damage. He called it a smash and run, and he said that the people weren't very good at it because they only broke the outside window pane, and they really had a pretty clear shot at at the whole window.
Democratic Party officials say the incident is probably tied to opposition to the health care legislation that just passed Congress. But the vandals didn't leave a note, so it's impossible to know for sure. Party Chair Patty Higgins singled out the strong words from former Alaska Governor Sarah Palin as possibly inciting violence. Palin has said, "Don't retreat, reload," and put a map on her Facebook page with crosshairs over districts she plans to target in elections this fall. Higgins calls it heightened rhetoric and says it's irresponsible.
They just send these messages out into the ether, and they're received by people in very differing ways. And when they are encouraging people with violent words and then kind of do a wink-wink and say, oh, we don't mean to really go shoot somebody or really break somebody's window, that is literally what they're saying to do.
Palin has dismissed the controversy. Dave Matheny says he fielded lots of angry phone calls last week, but most were very civil.
About 6 to 8 calls where they were swearing and name-calling. Most of them, the people were they were rational and they were reasoned, and I was handling most of those calls, and I really enjoy those calls because I get to understand why they're so upset and what their point of view is.
Matheny says the Democratic Party isn't scared by the vandalism. Staff members hope the incident can serve as a reminder that acts of violence won't do anything to move the country forward. In Anchorage, I'm Annie Feit.
Senator Mark Begich is in the state this week during Congress's Easter recess. Begich brought back an update on the new reauthorization of the Indian Health Care Improvement Act, which he shared with local reporters. The reauthorization comes with the health care reform bill signed into law last week and changes some rules for health care delivery in Native communities.
But also enhanced a few things. For example, there are some facilities being built in Alaska that they can build the hospital, but they cannot build the long-term health care facility next to it for the seniors and the elders of the villages. Under this legislation, it makes sure you can do that. You think it's a small little issue, but in the villages, this is a very important piece of the health care delivery system for their elders, that they're not only next to the hospital, but they're part of the system.
Alaska has the highest number of federally recognized Indian tribes in the nation, some 230 tribes. Begich said that reauthorization sets the parameters of what funding is available for a large percentage of Alaska's population.
We also increased mental health services under the Indian Health Services Plan. A great benefit for us here in Alaska and throughout this country. Having this reauthorized, this means we don't have to go through this massive reauthorization for the Indian Health Services again. Over time, we'll probably tweak it, upgrade it. It means tens of millions of additional dollars for Indian Health Services, again benefiting this state. That was wedged into this piece of legislation.
Although there is no new money in the Indian Health Service budget as a result of the reauthorization, the update does require the IHS to account for medical inflation rates and population growth to counter underfunding. Senator Begich is scheduled to address state legislators in Juneau on Wednesday. Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, a new rule that puts observers on small fishing vessels.
A lot of them are completely opposed to this, don't want an observer on their vessel, don't understand the point because they believe that they participate in a clean fishery.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station. The University of Alaska now offers both a Bachelor of Science and a Bachelor of Arts degree in fisheries. Fisheries students work directly with professionals in their field and enjoy hands-on learning through internships and research. Learn more at www.uaf.edu/fish. The UAF School of Fisheries and Ocean Sciences, educating fisheries and marine science experts in Alaska for Alaska. This message sponsored by the UAF School of Fisheries and Ocean Sciences.
Discussions about the Arctic Ocean got underway today between the foreign ministers of Canada, the United States, Russia, Norway, and Denmark. Canada is hosting the event in Chelsea, Quebec. Lawrence Cannon is Canada's Minister of Foreign Affairs.
The issues that will be raised are issues that deal with coastal states, issues of the mapping, issues of the public safety. And so we'll be able to do that. This excludes and is an indication that we want to have a permanent coastal council organization We are, and we still believe that the Arctic Council is the premier forum, and we don't want to change that.
Aboriginal groups and some other Arctic countries complain that they're being excluded from this week's event. Cannon says he's already met with the territorial premiers and that members of the Arctic Council will be briefed following the discussions. The annual Chimay Dance Festival wrapped up this weekend in Bethel. The event was attended by 24 dance groups and thousands of visitors. Shane Iverson from member station KYUK in Bethel was there and had this report.
John Paul is the only one singing and drumming for the Nunapichuk dancers, but his strong voice and rhythmic jowyuk could be felt throughout the auditorium. Nunapichuk is one of several Yupik dance groups to perform. It's also one of the oldest groups to reemerge since Yorok was subverted by Christian missionaries. Nunapichuk has been dancing for over 20 years, but John says their songs go back ages.
Ever since our elders passed on, we still keep up our culture.
John also composes new songs that his ancestors could have only dreamed about.
That was a cellophone. I made that song for a ringtone.
John's cousin, Wilson Andrew, jumps on stage and puts an imagined phone next to his ear. His eyes get big, his head starts bobbing, and the crowd starts enjoying themselves. Chimay is not only a celebration of Yorok, but all forms of dance. And the Midnight Cloggers from Anchorage added some variety to this year's lineup. Wearing bright pink t-shirts and shoes with metal taps, the all-female dance group really stands out at Chimay. The Midnight Cloggers were scheduled to attend last year, but their flights were canceled when Mount Redoubt erupted. Clogger Shannon Black said this year's trip was worth the wait.
This is our first trip out of Anchorage, out of the immediate area. We're thrilled to be treated to the best hospitality, some of the best audiences we've had. Love the kids around the stage. So yeah, very warm reception.
But when it comes to Chimay, the drum is often king, and one group had plenty of those. The Tomodachi Daiko from Anchorage. Dressed in navy blue hoppy coats and black pants, the all-ages group pounded on their taiko in near-perfect unison. Coordinated acrobatics made their performance just as exhilarating to watch. In their final song, the young drummers in the front row began waving their thick bocce sticks in front of each other while they danced around their drums. Mary Hasbrook is the spokeswoman for the group. She says it's as dangerous as it looks.
We all have the bruises to show for it on occasion, and some of the more advanced students, occasionally get hurt. There's been blood on bocce and blood on the drums more than once. There was some bleeding going on Friday, as a matter of fact.
Instructor Toshi Kono picks up the pace as the Tomodachi Daiko comes to a fever pitch. The drummers swing their bocce way over their head, bringing thunderous blows which ripple through the crowd. As they give their final bow, the crowd screams for an encore.
Outstanding.
But they do not return to stage. Another year of Chimay is over, and the Yupik dance calendar is now closed for the season. Reporting from Bethel, I'm Shane Iverson.
A bill making public any corporate or union electioneering activity is on its way to a vote by the entire state Senate. The measure moved from the Finance Committee today after one change eliminating state restrictions beyond federal law on foreign corporations' involvement. Direct contributions to candidates would still be banned, but Judiciary Chair Hollis French said the bill does all that is allowed under a U.S. Supreme Court decision that opens all elections to private funding sources of formal campaign organizations.
The chief thrust of this bill is to do two things. One, to make certain that there is disclosure to APOC of the independent expenditures made in this next election cycle by corporations and unions that are now free, because of a recent Supreme Court decision, to participate in our elections in a way that they never have before. So the first chief point is disclosure. The other chief point is for them to make disclaimers in the ads that run, whether in radio, TV, or the newspaper, so that Alaskans receiving these ads know who it is that's speaking to them about the elections that these entities will be participating in. So the thrust of the bill, again, is disclosure and disclaimer.
The bill is ready for a floor vote, but has not yet been scheduled. The House has a similar measure in its Judiciary Committee.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by Arctic Wire Rope and Supply, an Alaskan company providing lifting and rigging products since 1983, on the web at arcticwirerope.com. Find qualified Alaskans to fill your company's job vacancies at Alexis, the state of Alaska's virtual career center. Alexis has hundreds of workers for you to browse through, and you can specify details about required levels of experience and other qualifications. Learn more at alexsys.alaska.gov or visit any Alaska job center. This message is sponsored by the Alaska Department of Labor and Workforce Development.
The state of Alaska is suing the contractor that built the fast ferries Fairweather and Chenega. Since the Fairweather was deployed in 2005, the ship has been plagued with engine problems that often take it out of service for long periods of time. To some extent, the Chenega has had similar engine problems. The ships were manufactured by Director Shipyards of Bridgeport, Connecticut. The state has been negotiating with Director and engine manufacturers for some time. The Department of Law filed the lawsuit on Friday to beat statute of limitations deadlines, according to Department of Transportation spokesman Roger Weatherall.
We are up against the statute of limitations, which expires at the end of this month. And so we want to be able to put that on the books. That makes it very clearly stated that we are seeking resolution.
The Fairweather required a massive overhaul within the first 2 years of its deployment.
All four of those engines had hairline cracks in their steel sleeves. And there were also additional problems with the bowl gears and the shafts and the bearings, and you know, and that just delayed a lot of the service that we had promised people traveling on the ferries. People like the fast ferries. They're convenient. They're quick. They give riders a good scenic view of coastal southeast Alaska and the Chenega as well for Prince William Sound. We want to get a resolution with the companies that will allow Alaskans to enjoy the fast ferries that we brought into the state.
Weatherall says the ship's engines have only about 10,000 hours on them, and the Marine Highway System was guaranteed 100,000 hours before major maintenance. And he says some engine problems actually fixed by the manufacturer have grown worse. Attorney General Dan Sullivan says the state received a faulty product and Alaskans should be appropriately compensated. Though the lawsuit has been filed, the state will continue to negotiate with the companies. Some of Alaska's small boat fishermen may have to carry an onboard observer in the near future. The federal government is restructuring its fishery observer program to better monitor bycatch on larger vessels, but the proposed rules would also include boats under 60 feet for the first time. Fishermen in southeast Alaska are concerned about the cost as well as the practicalities of hosting an observer on vessels that are often short on space as it is. From KFSK in Petersburg, Matt Lichtenstein reports.
The North Pacific Fishery Management Council is considering several options to revamp its observer program, which is administered by NIMS, the National Marine Fisheries Service. NIMS primarily uses observers to record and manage bycatch in federal fisheries. For the most part, small boat owners have not had a deal with the program because observers have not been required on vessels less than 60 feet in length. They're also not required on any halibut boats. The proposed changes could affect federally managed halibut and groundfish vessels of all sizes across the state.
The observer program I speak of, to a great degree, we're speaking about a program that has not had a big direct impact on southeast Alaska. It's had a huge impact on the Gulf of Alaska, Bering Sea.
That's Martin Lefled with the Alaska Fisheries Science Center in Seattle. He directs fisheries monitoring and analysis for NIMS. Lefled and his deputy director, Patty Nelson, recently visited Petersburg and Sitka to meet with fishermen and look at some of the small boats that make up most of the southeast fleet. They gave Petersburg Vessel Owners Association members and others an overview of the proposed changes to the observer program, which has been in place for 20 years.
So why are we looking at this 20 years afterwards? It's still going, but I guess a way to phrase it is it's kind of time for more than a tune-up. It's time for a major service. The things had problems that were identified at the beginning. The council is looking at this now as a priority issue for them to get after. And some of the problems we've had out there have reached a point that they can't be ignored.
In a problem statement last fall, the North Pacific Council pointed to several issues, starting with the lack of observer coverage for the halibut fishery as well as for groundfish boats less than 60 feet, which represent a large part of Alaska's fleet. The council also raised concerns about some vessels that already have to carry observers. While boats over 125 feet have observers on board 100% of the time, boats 60 to 125 feet long only have to have coverage 30% of the time. That leeway has led to problems, according to NIMF's monitoring program staff, Deputy Director Patty Nelson.
Managers have never had the responsibility to place observers where and when they would like to. That decision has been up to the fishing vessels themselves, unless, of course, there's 100% coverage. But for those vessels with less than 100% coverage, the decision is up to the fishing vessel, and they work directly with the contractor.
And according to the council, the lack of NIMF's control over that decision can jeopardize the reliability of the data. There are several options on the table for funding the new program, but for smaller boats, all of the alternatives require a 2% fee based on fishermen's landings. NIMF has not yet detailed the percentage of the fleet they hope to cover, nor how many boats will have to take observers. Small boat owners and halibut fishermen in Southeast have a variety of concerns about being included in the observer program. Cost is a big one, considering the substantial decline in halibut catches. Another significant problem is the lack of space on many smaller boats. Julianne Curry is director of the Petersburg Vessel Owners Association. Right now, Curry thinks her members and other fishermen around Southeast have a mix of views on the proposal.
It really depends on the individual. A lot of them are completely opposed to this, don't want an observer on their vessel, don't understand the point because they believe that they participate in a clean fishery. And they don't want to have the big brother aspect, nor do they want to have to pay the fee to help fund the program. And then you've got other guys who think, you know, perhaps we do need better fisheries data, and, you know, you've got guys who would be happy if there was a camera on every vessel. And people are all over the board on this issue. So until the initial review comes out, I think, you know, we'll have people on all sides, but it'll give them a better understanding of which direction they want to go.
The council will review a staff report on the issue this June in Sitka, and the council may make a decision on the plan next October. In Petersburg, I'm Matt Lichtenstein.
Construction is picking up inside the Juneau International Airport Terminal, which is receiving its first facelift in more than 25 years. The $22 million renovation project is set to wrap up in October, but work is underway to complete major portions of it now before the summer tourist season kicks into high gear. KTOO's Casey Kelly has this update.
It's Monday afternoon at the Juneau Airport, and Alaska Airlines Flight 64 has just arrived from Anchorage. Before most passengers can even get to the bag claim area, a crew starts loading their luggage into the terminal using a roller conveyor. Carrie Tonkin looks on nostalgically as suitcases, boxes, and child seats stack up on the floor.
This reminds me of when I was a kid and we landed in PBYs. It was the same kind of a system.
Tonkin, who lives in Juneau and has just returned from a trip to Anchorage, says she hardly noticed the extra time it took to get her bags.
No, it's the improvement far outweighs the inconvenience. It'll be good.
The bag claim construction is the most visible project at the airport right now. Crews tore out the old baggage belt last week. Now the area where it used to be is covered by a giant black tarp. Airport architect Catherine Fritz says the new conveyor belt will be twice as long and should be operational in about 2 weeks.
Same general type that we had before, but brand new, won't be as noisy and choppy, won't stop as many times when it's not supposed to.
One of the major reasons for the terminal renovation was to reduce passenger congestion. For instance, Fritz says the entire baggage claim area has been expanded by 5,000 square feet.
You know how it's been pretty buddy-buddy, close to the bag belt, trying to get yours when the other guy wants to get theirs? Well, it'll allow people to have plenty of space in front of the belt to get their bags.
Work on the bag claim area was originally scheduled for July, but Fritz says the contractor, McGraw Custom Construction, moved it up to avoid tourist season. Construction on the Transportation Security Administration screening area, originally scheduled for this summer as well, will now take place in mid to late April. It's expected to last only 2 weeks, but during that time, all bags will have to be hand-screened. In a town like Juneau, where lots of locals like to push the limit, Fritz says passengers will definitely need to be at the airport 2 hours ahead of their flight. She says there's not really a good time to do the work, but at least McGraw was able to avoid doing it during the summer.
We think that would have been a pretty huge problem for our travelers and stuff, so they were able to rearrange things and get it done now in a concentrated amount of time before the big tourism peak gets here.
Fritz says this is the busiest time during the two-year renovation project. Work on the exterior front of the terminal and installation of infrastructure for a new ground source heat pump is going on as well. A new escalator and staircase to the baggage claim area are also planned, but most of the work that might inconvenience travelers should be done by May. Fritz says McGraw Custom Construction has been paid about 65% of contract costs to date. Those are your tax dollars at work, with $10 million of the $22 million total project cost being paid for with local sales tax revenue. The rest is coming from state and federal funds. In Juneau, I'm Casey Kelly.
The Fairbanks Borough Assembly is giving $10,000 to the Yukon Quest for marketing. The 1,000-mile sled dog race between Fairbanks and Whitehorse, Yukon, is central to winter tourism in the region, but has suffered loss of sponsorship due to the recession. Quest Executive Director Marty Sturey told the Assembly that hasn't affected the event's popularity, with fans who went to the race's website in record numbers in February.
We had 1.74 million hits to our website in the 20 days of February. Never heard of. We crashed so many different things, but the world was saying hello. Of that, we had 399,806 unique visits, and it was from 169 countries.
The Assembly voted unanimously to support the $10,000 grant. The money will help the organization with marketing as it struggles to dig out from a $32,000 deficit. And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at APRN.org. We had reports tonight from the CBC in Canada, Shane Iverson in Bethel, Rosemary Alexander and Casey Kelly in Juneau, Matt Lichtenstein in Petersburg, and Dan Bross in Fairbanks. APRN's Dave Donaldson reported, and our editor and producer is Annie Feit, our audio engineer, Kristen Spack, and I'm Ellen Lockyer.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible in part by your local public radio station. Every day, people all over Alaska are discovering how public transportation benefits them, their businesses, and their communities. Public transportation in Alaska provides 7 million rides a year to work, medical appointments, shopping, school, social opportunities, wherever people need to go. With public transportation available, the going is good. Find out more at goodgoingalaska.com. This message is sponsored by the Alaska Mobility Coalition, a nonprofit organization. If you know an Alaskan struggling to find health insurance because of a high-risk chronic medical condition or other uninsurable reasons, encourage them to talk to a local insurance broker about the Alaska Comprehensive Health Insurance Association. ACHIA was created by the state legislature to meet the needs of Alaskans, and several plans are available. Talk to an independent insurance broker. Information also available at www.achia.com. This message sponsored by the ACHIA.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.